Say something, Bear. Just say, like,
oh,
I like
say something.
Yeah, I like windows. But...
Are you testing?
Yeah, I just want to see if it pick up your voice.
Yeah, this is it's a great new gadget, isn't it?
It is.
Really, I wish wish I'd had those all along.
I think what I'm doing is I'm trying to get some sense of how the South coming out of World War II responded to all of the social issues that were then getting to be so prevalent, mm-hmm. particularly the racial issue. And I've been doing a lot of reading in libraries and old newspapers about the Southern Regional Council in Atlanta.
Yep.
And let's see. The newspaper people in particular in this period interest me, and since journalism is sort of my field, I was especially interested in whenever I come across the name of somebody in journalism who's trying to come to grips with some of these issues, and obviously you were.
Yeah, I was president of the Tampa Open League. Yeah.
Could you just tell me first your background, how you got to Tampa and how long you stayed
there? Well, my wife and I were born in Macon, Georgia.
In Macon?
Yeah, and Macon is an unusual city as far as education is concerned. It has Mercy University where I went. Right. My wife went to Western. Her father was dean vice president of Western.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go to work on... Well, I really went to work when I was 9 years old. My father's school teacher. And ran a business school later. I went into that school and learned to type when I was 9 years old. And I left home when he married again. And at 13, I was living at the YMCA.
By yourself?
Yeah, supporting myself.
In Macon?
Mm-hmm. And then, the director of the Y knew I could type, and asked me to come down and type up his basketball scores, Sunday School League stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I did, and I heard newspapers were pretty bad places, and I wouldn't go down to my E's. And he'd send them down at night to the newspapers, the Telegraph, the morning paper.
Uh-huh.
At that time, Gordon Allen was his name, was a sports editor, and he got that copy in. Regularly, and he started inquiring of P. MacArthur, who was then the head of the YMCA, who in the world was doing it. I was 14, and he called for me to come to see him.
About what year was this?
Let's see. I was born in 1911, and I was
about 25.
25, yeah. So I went down to see him, and he said, "You ought to be in the newspaper business." So he asked me if I'd be the high school correspondent for the newspaper.
Were you going to school during
that? Yeah, yeah, high school. No, high school for boys.
But you were on your own.
Oh, yeah. And he put me on the old string basis. The more you wrote pretty, the more money you made. I think 10 cents an inch. But I got awfully fascinated with it while we were going to high school, and never got out of it. I was in it from age 14 till I retired.
Wow.
And I grew up when I was, I got off the string list when I was about 17 to be the assistant sports editor. And at night, let's see, yeah. And when I was 20, I was sports editor because suppose that who had been there, a new one, left, and I think Gamble let me have the job. So I was still living at the Y, and then seniors in high school, I met my wife, and we were going together. She went to Wesleyan, and I went to Mercer. We decided, because I had a good job during the Depression, nobody else had a good job, that we just well go ahead and get married. So we did, you know, for all this home in 1931.
Wow.
And 33, I left there when the Tampa Times was bought by, was leased to Dave Smiley and Ralph Nicholson. And they wanted a sports editor, and I went down there as a kid.
Was it owned by the Bryan family then?
No.
That was later on they bought it.
It was owned then by D.B. McKay. And he,
oh, yeah.
He leased it out to Dave Smiley and Ralph Nicholson.
Was the Tribune then owned by Bryan, or did that come later? They already owned the Tribune. So you all were really rival papers.
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so.
When was it that the Bryan family bought the Times?
I had left there and gone to Orlando. That was, I think I was in 51 or 2.
So your entire career there, this was a real competitive situation.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah, man. We also had radio station WEAE. And I also did, how funny, I was thinking about it the other day. Prime Time 6:15 and Saul Fleischman. And I did sports show for Kellogg Cornflake, 15 minutes.
In the evening?
In the evening, yeah. And I just remembered we were paid $25 a week to do that job. A lot of money, though.
Yeah. This was what year now you went to Tampa?
I went there in 33.
In 33.
Left there in 49, went to Orlando.
Did you go to Tampa as the sports editor?
Yeah. But I was made the managing editor in 35.
Wow.
Just 2 years.
Good heavens.
And
you remained the managing editor till you left?
Yeah.
From 35 to 49?
49.
Wow.
I went to Orlando.
To the Sentinel?
Yeah. Sentinel and Star. I was executive editor of both papers.
For the rest of your career?
No, 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Then I went to, I was executive editor of the San Antonio Express and News. And the editor of the, managing editor of the Houston Press when I joined Scripps Howard.
Uh-huh.
I'd worked for families up to then, and you never get very far in financially unless you, not with families.
Right.
But Scripps Howard took, and I went to Houston, and last night I was watching a game between Houston and Cincinnati opening the 25th anniversary of the Astrodome.
Uh-huh.
I saw the Astrodome built from ground up.
Yeah.
And wrote a book about the builder. I have my book of Roy Hoffman's. After I retired, I wrote it. He wanted me to.
Yeah.
So the dome was 25 years old last night. So
a big part of your career was outside of Florida then, wasn't it?
Well, I was, of course, I was in Florida for 20 years. Texas, 12 years.
Uh-huh.
And when I joined the Houston Press, it was, needed help very much. But it couldn't make it, and Scripps Howard liked me, apparently. And when they sold the press to the Chronicle, they sent me to Memphis as the managing editor of the Memphis Press Seminar. And I stayed there 14 years before I retired. But Scripps Howard was awfully good to me.
Let's say those 14 years would have been in the 50s and 60s.
Later
than that.
See, I retired in July 77, September 77.
And so from about 65 to 77 or thereabouts, you were in Memphis?
63.
Uh-huh. 63 to
77. Yeah, the Press Seminar, the afternoon paper.
Yeah.
And they let me stay an extra year. They have a mandatory retirement. And I stayed an extra year because I was president of the Tennessee Press Association.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to keep that honor and stay with the paper. So I retired a year later, but now, from September, I will have been retired 13 years.
And you had three long stints in Florida and Texas and in Tennessee.
That's right.
During your career.
And of course, I grew up in Georgia from 14
too.
To
all 20. Across the South.
Four states.
Yeah, that's quite
a lot. I had a pretty good view of all that was going on. I was one of the, I grew up in Macon, and this had a great effect on me. Macon was, as far as the educational system was concerned, they had a self-perpetuating board of education that, set up the best school system on the old segregated laws there was.
Mm-hmm.
They lived up to separate and equal.
They really made the black schools equal in terms of
their
investment.
They had fine high schools,
uh-huh.
Grammar schools, separate and equal. And in fact, we separated the boys and the girls, and the boys
uh-huh.
and the girls went to high school, separate high schools.
Right.
An old Sydney near high school for boys is where I
Famous
went.
Famous school, isn't it?
Yeah. Where I went, and of course they had ROTC and military.
Uh-huh.
And
then also the News and the Telegraph had a really good reputation as good newspapers.
That's right. Cruising. I worked for the Telegraph,
mm-hmm.
the morning paper. The Anderson family, they owned it.
Owned both those papers? Or
no,
were
they finally owned it. The News sold out to them.
Who did the News, who owned the News back then?
I forgot who owned the News.
Somebody local?
Yeah, I believe so. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't, Telegraph just, you know, Telegraph discovered Franklin Roosevelt. It was my man who put me in managing editor of the, I mean, sports editor, put me in the sports editor, named Mark Etheridge.
Yeah, sure.
Mark was out of Mississippi, and he was the managing editor, and he gave me the job as a kid at sports editor.
I'll be darned.
And he left when they were cutting salaries and had to freeze the wages.
Mm-hmm. He went to Louisville.
No, he went to Europe on the Overland of Trust to Berlin, and then came back and went with the AP and then Louisville.
I see.
And of course, he taught me an awful lot. He was a great mm-hmm. newspaper man. So I was lucky to be under him. And I also was lucky to be under Dave Smiley in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Smiley was a Philadelphia lawyer, you know, newspaper man too. He used to be, he once was editor of the Ledger in Philadelphia. He had the chance to take over with Ralph Nicholson, the Tampa papers, and on lease, and they ultimately bought it. And then Smiley bought out Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
And Smiley's two boys, one of whom I trained, Joe, both got rich when the old man sold the paper
mm-hmm.
to the Tribune. But I left them. I knew that with those two sons there, I never would get very
no
far.
Chance of you really breaking out.
So I went to Orlando and Martin Anderson promised me the moon, but he was a son of a bitch, and I left him.
Uh-huh.
I went to San Antonio and Houston.
Yeah.
And I had 52 years of moon.
You've had quite an interesting career, and then at the end, you would have been in Memphis when Martin Luther King was
I was there. We were covered. I covered it. My staff covered it from one end to the other.
Yeah.
And the only thing I hated about it worse was it. And Ray headline all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it was some relative he heard or something.
I became interested when I was getting in the background. We and the relationship of the races in Memphis, I mean in Macon, was marvelous.
Different than it was in Tampa and
Memphis.
Yeah,
much marvelous, really. There were no, they had good schools. They had the, when they brought in the old, used to bring the old San Carlo Opera into Macon as a boy, I remember. They always had the balcony reserved for blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was with most everything. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up on a street there near Wesleyan College, the old Wesleyan. And right behind it was an alley which used to be slave quarters. Mm-hmm. And the Negroes lived back there, and I played in the backyard with Negro boys until I went to school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I always had a good relationship with all of them, and still do for that matter.
Well, you got to Tampa now. Let me just, let me get you to focus a little bit on this. If you were president of the Tampa Urban League in 1930-something,
I got it.
Then you would have been classified as a liberal.
Oh, boy.
To put it just politely. Now, a lot of people would say in a lot worse terms than that.
I was on the Southern Regional Council Board. I was on the Urban League. I was a radical.
Yeah.
And I was, they nearly ran me out of town. I ran on the front page of the Tampa Times, a picture of Joe Louis when he first won the championship.
Yeah.
And boy, did we get a reaction.
Got upset over that.
But I stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And I debated nationally on with Tampa Urban League. National Urban League. there was a debate with Louis Seltzer, the editor of the Cleveland Press. He took the side of end of segregation, and I took the side of the separate eco would work if people would let it work.
Mm-hmm.
But I still was a radical when I wasn't at all. I just thought they ought to have a chance in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best I could do.
Yeah.
But
there was I found a couple of clippings that you, this is one out of, this is an AP story out of Richmond about a speech you made to the National Urban League meeting in Richmond. And then this was really interesting to me. This was a publication called Voting Restrictions in the 13 Southern States, a report by the Committee of Editors and Writers of the South. You remember that? And it had a list of all the people who signed this document saying that a concerted Southwide effort needs to be made to make voting accessible to everybody.
That's correct. I did some work on that too.
Mm-hmm.
And
the names on the front there read like a who's who of Southern literary and journalistic liberalism.
Well, that's the man right there, Mark.
Yeah, there he is, right. That's the man who hired
me in the business.
Uh-huh. This was 1944. This was pretty radical stuff for people to be doing then, wasn't it?
Yep, it was. I've been calling a nigger lover, you know. Didn't bother me. Oh, I never will forget that when I was president of the Tampa Urban League, a national officer of the NAACP came to Memphis and wanted to see me. And I didn't have time at the office. I said, why don't you come out to the house tonight? Told him how to get there, and he came and sat. And all the neighbors saw him coming and going to my house. Oh boy, they all wanted to know what I was doing entertaining that nigger.
Yeah.
But it really, I never was more than verbally cussed out. That's mm-hmm. all.
Nobody ever threatened you or anything like that.
No. And of course, in the 30s, you know, making. In Tampa, it was my best friend was Rex Farrier, who was a state attorney.
Uh-huh.
The godfather of my children. Rex is still alive. I was writing a book about him, and he had a stroke, and I had to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
He's still alive over there. He was paralyzed, and they had those 30s. Great fight. I was amused last night with all the furor going on about $55 million a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole gang killings and everything that went on in Tampa.
Yeah,
in the
30s. Tampa was a rough town, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was over number game.
Pretty much a wide open town, wasn't it?
Yeah, but mostly it was a numbers racket.
Uh-huh.
And all these numbers now is legal and going in state.
Yeah.
And then it was the Italian Americans against the Cuban Spanish Americans,
mm-hmm.
who fought.
Yeah.
With the white guy in the middle of it was Charlie Wall.
Yeah.
He finally got his killed with the gangs that were there.
Yeah. The Italians against the Cubans.
Yep, that's what it was.
Where did the blacks fit into all that?
There weren't a lot of blacks there then. They saw it in the background.
Mm-hmm.
There were enough there that we had to recognize that they didn't have the kind of excellent schools I had at Macon.
Right, I know that for a fact.
And so they say, you know, segregation was pretty rough there in Tampa for a long time. I never will forget. They had in one school there a Cuban. He was just black as the ace of spades.
Yeah.
But he was a Cuban. They let him go to white school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those kind of things happen. And the number of blacks, by our definition, in the Cuban population is really fairly substantial.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they're Cubans first.
That's right.
Spanish and all the rest. And so, how long were you president of the Urban League?
Oh, two or three years. I'd have to go look it up.
In the 40s during the war?
Yeah.
Would have been the time?
Yeah.
You were not in the service?
No, I was 34 years old.
Uh-huh.
And had a commission in the Navy, a reserve commission. And I had my physical, and I sort of did some checking to find out what I might do at that age in the Navy. And they said, well, you'll wind up after your training in the seventh floor of some office building in a port counting ships. Well, that didn't appeal to me at all. And my boss, he went to bat, and I didn't ask for it, but he went to bat and said I was a central man in the central industry. And I was really a censor of the whole war.
Yeah.
As a managing editor, because the rule was you don't print anything that would be a comfort to the enemy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All weather, that's all you can make.
Yeah.
And of course, I was also thinking about the days back there. In the 40s, when the shipyards were so busy, and we were all puzzled by those concrete ships they were building.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what in the hell they're building concrete ships for? And of course, they knew what they were doing, the Navy did. Because they used those concrete ships built in Tampa for breakwater on Normandy.
I'll be.
That's why they were built.
I'll be.
We finally found out what they were for.
Isn't that something?
Had a bunch of Russians in that, too.
What would have been the makeup of the Urban League in those years?
There were a few white people that were interested.
Mm-hmm.
But the blacks, too. And we'd speak out of various things.
Did you get any Cuban or Italian involvement in that?
No. Sort of stayed away from that. It was a black community,
uh-huh.
and interested whites who made it up.
Mm-hmm.
I also served on the state committee on race relations.
That was part of the Southern Regional Council.
Yeah.
And you were involved in those early meetings of Southern Regional Council. You remember Virginius Dabney?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I saw him a week or two ago up in Richmond. He's 92 years old now.
Yeah, I made a lot of speeches.
Mm-hmm.
about giving the Negro equal opportunity.
Yeah. And just to kind of characterize some of that, you would have been against the poll tax?
Oh, yeah.
And for an open primary?
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, access to the vote was part of what you were after? Equal pay for equal work?
Right.
Like teach school teachers?
Right. Our paper editorially fought for that in the state.
And the right to serve on juries?
Yeah, every.
And equal justice before the law?
Yeah.
And, fair share funding for things like public housing and schools and hospitals?
Oh, yeah. Our paper was for giving the black the equal opportunity to everything.
In the defense industry, yeah. Serving in the military. What about when it got to what really amounted to desegregation, like riding on the bus, not having the back of the bus thing? Did you take a position on that?
Well, it didn't come up in Tampa. We,
uh-huh.
I don't remember any controversy about that at all. Mm-hmm. That came a little later,
mm-hmm.
after I was gone.
What about the Fair Employment Practices Committee of the federal government?
Well, at the time, that wasn't in effect in the 40s.
Well, there was a temporary one. It was installed by executive order of President
Roosevelt. Oh, yeah, during the war, yeah.
And then there was the question during Truman's time of whether or not it ought to be made permanent.
Yeah.
Did you ever end up taking a position on that one editorially?
I don't really recall, because I was so busy as the managing editor. I left those things to the editor, and I don't remember really.
Mm-hmm. And finally, as all this unfolded, and the years went by, and we got into the 40s and the 50s, and there were court decisions coming out of the Supreme Court, particularly on higher education in the 40s and early 50s, before the Brown decision, mm-hmm. and then, of course, finally Brown in 54. What happened to your own personal views about race? Did you end up deciding that you thought Brown was a good decision, or did you end up being against it?
No, I think Brown's are always a good decision. The decision, I got to straighten it out in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that out of it, the Supreme Court upholding busing upset me no end.
Yeah.
I think busing was an evil, and it still is.
Right, that was a later development. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it still is.
Uh-huh.
And like in Memphis.
Yeah.
Busing has caused all prep schools to be developed for whites, and there's 90% black, so it didn't do any good. Mm-hmm. It didn't give any opportunity for the whites and the blacks to get together.
Yeah, it didn't.
In the public schools.
Right.
Same way in Atlanta, same way in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just can't, if they left buses alone and let nature take its course, the Negroes going to school with whites where they could,
mm-hmm.
neighborhood schools, would be a whole lot better off than we are today.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
opinion, uh-huh. I mean.
Right.
I never did agree with forced busing.
Yeah.
It's expensive and mm-hmm. a waste and an emphasis on the division of the races.
Yeah. There in the 40s, like about the time you would have been leaving Tampa and going to Houston, were you still involved with SRC?
Well, when I went to Orlando in 49, I remember uh-huh. was. I continued to work quietly with people on good race relations. But I wasn't as prominent there as I was in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had one hell of a job to do in running two newspapers.
Right.
And that would kill me.
Yeah, your situation changed quite a bit yeah. when you went there. You took on a much bigger responsibility.
Yeah, and but my views didn't change. I just didn't have the opportunity to do as much, although I did what I could.
Were you of the opinion that all the Jim Crow laws would eventually fall?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought
segregated
so.
Restaurants and water.
Oh, I thought that was falling long before it did.
Yeah.
And but you see, still, it's a hard thing to realize. I look at this town here.
Mm-hmm.
Now all the blacks here live across the river. There's not a lot of them here, not more than 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe there's one black family here on the beach side.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go into the restaurants and you go anywhere else, and it's seldom you ever see a black shop.
Mm.
Our yacht club, I'm in the middle of the yacht club, and I didn't. We have 350 members. There's not a black in the lot, and there's not a black worker in the place at all.
Wow.
And it's not deliberate.
No.
It's just the way the town developed.
Mm-hmm.
This used to be a railroad town.
It did.
And,
on the Florida East Coast Railroad.
And the strike. This was one of the key spots.
Uh-huh.
And when the strike came along, well, they just changed the face of this whole town.
When was that?
Damn, it came when I was in Texas, I believe.
Uh-huh. Been in the 50s, I guess.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I wasn't in Florida then.
No.
I just heard about it.
Yeah. Well, as you look back on all that involvement, you know, it was an unusual sort of thing for you to be involved. Most of your friends, most of your business associates were not out front on this issue, talking about how we need to have good racial
relations. No, you usually had to have, depending on preachers and a few lawyers.
Yeah.
And
But you obviously, you felt pretty strongly about that, or you wouldn't have been involved in it. Now, when you look back on it, does that period of time seem to you in any way like a time when the South might have, had it been, if more people had been willing to do what you did, that you might have been able to work out some of these social problems without going through all of the bloodshed and trauma that we subsequently went through?
Yeah, if people were just to stop and analyze things, and they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one of the reasons. Is it begins in with children and attitudes in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Now to eliminate those attitudes as the various families grew up is an awfully hard job.
Yeah.
Awfully hard job.
Yeah, it is. There's no question about it.
And my two children grew up in no prejudice at all about black.
Mm-hmm.
My son is married, remarried. He married a girl who worked as an executive for Viviana Foods, and he was executive. She had two girls. They built a home, or she did. You know. They moved in it when they married. And the neighborhood in Houston they live in is very nice, nice home. But about a half a mile away is a subdivision for blacks. And under many of those black children go to the same schools that my two step grandchildren go to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bunch of.
Yes.
And they're girls, and they do a lot of things together. The blacks have been in their homes, and they have absolutely no prejudice
mm-hmm.
with blacks at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of those. They didn't run. They thought about putting them in private schools, but
mm-hmm.
my son and his wife both decided to better.
Mm-hmm. And
where
does your daughter live?
She lives in Colorado Springs.
Uh-huh.
She's grown. She has a grown son.
Uh-huh.
And
your attitudes, I'm curious. Obviously, you didn't get these feelings from your family. You left home when you were just a kid.
Right.
Who do you suppose influenced you to feel the way you ended up feeling about all this?
I guess around the newspaper. Mm-hmm. The men around the newspaper. They were very fine people.
Mark Etheridge turned out to be one of the real outspoken people
on
this
period. I think Mark Etheridge and his thinking had more to do with my own attitude than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Snow, his wife.
Yeah.
And he was from Mississippi.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
She was from Macon.
Yeah.
The old Snow family in Macon.
Uh-huh.
And we, I suppose that, and also just in school and seeing. I tell you where I got. I've made speeches about this, and I just happened to think about it. When the Klan was at its peak in the 30s, and I could picture it in there in Tampa, or when they were moving not long ago about how it escalated. Well, I was a young boy, and they had a rape there. A black man was accused of rape. And no trial anyhow, but the Klan went out and killed him and put him on the back of a car and dragged him through the downtown streets of Macon.
Mm.
No stopping by the police at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it, and I think that had as much effect
Golly.
On me as anything else.
You were
else.
Just a boy?
Yeah. Never forget it. And to my horror, one of the marching Klansmen I saw was for my brother-in-law.
Wow.
He didn't know. But he was a good man, really.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one of those old crackers who said, well, the blacks just can't have what they think they want.
Yeah.
Just couldn't get it out of his mind, so.
Yeah. We just about did ourselves in on that, you know.
Sure
we
did.
We came
did you
close.
See that movie the high Klansman, how he gypped them and finally
yeah.
had called them. It was a hell of a good
yeah.
job not
yeah.
long ago.
I saw that. I guess we're lucky that we came through that without more of a massacre of people than actually.
Because I was in Tampa when they had the famous flogging case.
Uh-huh.
And my friend.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Mr. Edgerton, Ms. Ray.
How you doing, Ms. Ray?
I'm fine, thank you.
Pleased to meet you.
So glad to meet you. Where are you from?
I live in Nashville, Tennessee.
That's true. I see so.
Well, I'm afraid so. We
yeah, yes.
Some,
when we left Memphis,
we
I said,
had it in
again.
December, and we had it in April, believe it or not. We had snow last week in Nashville. Didn't last long, but it was enough to remind me I need to be farther south.
I will go back to ice
and snow. No, it's awful.
Have you all had a cocoa tab?
Oh, yeah, I got some. I have coffee in that.
I know, thanks. I don't care for anything.
The editor of the Nashville paper is a good friend of mine.
John Siegenthaler?
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Very much. I was president of TPA.
Oh, yeah, that's right, sure.
And,
you told me that.
Yeah.
I've been in Tennessee 14 years.
Right, right.
Oh. Half of 17, though.
Yeah. Did you ever know Stetson Kennedy? He was a writer.
I don't believe so.
Uh-huh.
Kennedy?
Uh-huh. Stetson Kennedy.
Kennedy.
And there was somebody else on this list I was going to ask you about. We talked about Mark Etheridge.
You're telling his effect on me.
Oh, yeah.
Another person on here from Macon was John D. Allen.
Oh, yeah.
What was he?
Professor Allen, he was at Mercer.
Mercer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was there when I was there.
What was he, an English professor
yeah,
or something?
English professor at Mercer.
Uh-huh. And then another guy in Mercer I wanted to ask you about, I'll find his name, Harry Strozier.
Oh, Harry.
Tell me who Harry
She's
Strozier is.
She's kin to him.
Well, who is that?
He's a lawyer there.
Is he still living?
No, he's too old. Isn't Harry Strozier kin? Wasn't he kin to you, Don?
What?
Harry Strozier. I thought he was.
He was a lawyer.
Yeah, lawyer, yeah. Mm-hmm. Her father was being vice president of Wesleyan for 25 years. And he believed in the South development.
Yeah.
One thing that he hated was was the liquor.
Yeah.
He had a brother that ruined his life.
And he was...
He fought Al Smith all over.
He was a dry, real strong dry.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And it's funny how that issue breaks differently than all... You know, you get to talking to somebody about civil liberties, and you go right down the line, people say, yeah, I'm for that, and you get to liquor, and if something's happened back in their lives, they'll say, no, I draw the line there. I'm not, you know, I'm dry on that, or maybe they're militantly wet on it. Virginius Dabney was one of the wets on that issue. He was really felt strongly about it.
Well, our papers, the Macon papers, were against Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, W.T. Anderson, he and his brother owned the Telegraph. The first drink of whiskey I ever had when I was assistant sports editor, 19 years old. He had a party for the staff and went out, and he kept in his basement kegs of Georgia corn liquor
mm-hmm.
that was illegal.
Yeah.
And I don't think he knew how old I was, but somebody gave me a drink of that old rotten gut bourbon. No, it was good bourbon. It was charcoal. And I had that first drink, and I tell you, it made me so sick. I thought I'd never have another drink. But I have. Are you put your foot full time at writing?
Yes, sir. That's
Wasn't that pretty?
Oh my, isn't that a beauty? That's a great dog.
Oh, you love it to death.
Yeah.
Just a year old. Don, don't do that. Go around.
You made that speech in Richmond that was the National Convention of the Urban League.
That's correct.
In September of 1948.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything much about that experience, where you met, and how the segregation issue was handled there? Where did people stay? No, it was in Richmond in 1948.
Richmond, yeah, I went to that one.
In 1948.
She got a better memory than I have.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was okay. We stayed at the parties together now. They were all very nice, but one of them was a little... overdid it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not giving the kissing of the bites.
Uh-huh.
Which was a little far-fetched to me.
Yeah.
But one time he brought some people home. Three Negro gentlemen. One of them had a PhD from Dartmouth. I remember that. And our neighbors were horrible.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And he brought them right in the front door and they sat right there in the living room. My kids enjoyed them.
Yeah. Remember Charles S. Johnson? He was president at Fisk, and he was active in the Southern Regional Council during that time.
I remember the name. Uh-huh. I didn't remember the name.
And then some of the black newspaper editors of that time, all of them were weeklies except the Atlanta paper, but there was a guy in Norfolk named P.B. Young who was active in all of this.
Maybe I remember the name.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a Negro put this out.
Oh, Memphis Magazine is owned by somebody black? I didn't know.
Yes, sir.
The top man.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's a darn good magazine, too.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I've written for that magazine. I did a long piece on James Earl Ray several years ago.
Oh, that was embarrassment to us.
I went to the prison and talked to James Earl Ray, and I talked to a lot of people who... including a good many blacks who didn't really believe, never had believed, that James Earl Ray was the trigger man. They felt he was involved in that, but that he was set up to cover the trail of somebody else. And of course, Ray, I mean, that's what he would tell you. That's what he did tell me, as a matter of fact.
Because his name is spelled just like his.
Kept telling me about
seeing that. I lived out in the north part of
Scenic Hills.
Memphis and Scenic Hills, and we heard on the radio, and I had to get to town to hurry, mm-hmm. get the staff moving.
Yeah, boy, that was a real...
Let me see, I got...
Oh, to... yeah, but let me tell you something. Something's never been shown since either. When they were doing, when he was marching with those garbage men, and they're the ones that were in Memphis, too, he was walking down Main Street with a whole bunch of them, you know, praise the Lord. Mm-hmm. And they started carrying on shooting and stuff. They had it flashed one time on television. There was no more. He turned around and ran like a dog, just ran. Mm. But they never showed it one time. Mm.
Mm. Wow.
What are you looking at?
The Urban League.
The Urban League thing is not out.
It's not out. Yeah.